getting loose. I've got to get into the flow of it. You know, we bought a beanbag chair for the... It's in the game room here. It's right around the corner. You can't see it, but it's a massive beanbag chair. Big enough for a boy of my size to comfortably lay on. The idea being that while I'm streaming or whenever, if Leah wants to come in here and hang out and chill and just knit, she can at least like be in the same room. We can talk back and forth, whatever it is. But it has not done any favors for my work productivity. I tell you, when you had a beanbag chair that's just right there, that at any point you could just stop working and go take a little nap in, you do more napping than working. You don't spend a lot of time in the computer chair.
You're like a cat now. You just sleep in a beanbag chair all day.
I do. And then when I climb in, my cats climb in. So then it's reassuring. It encourages me to do it more.
I love that. I need a beanbag chair too. Who needs productivity when you have beans under your butt?
Yeah, that famous expression.
That's what I've always said this. And as, you know, both of us are pretty hardcore streamers. You know, we're out there streaming.
Yeah.
Our video games. Do you think it would be comfortable to sit in a beanbag chair while you stream?
I thought about that. Like, I mean, it's in here. Should I try running a stream from it? But I landed on, I don't think there's any less flattering angle of someone than, like, looking down the barrel of them while they sit in a beanbag chair.
Just a lot of under-the-neck view.
Yeah, just like, it's got a real accidentally turned your selfie camera on your phone on when you when you meant to open up a different app kind of vibe to it.
Like a beached porpoise. If you guys like beached porpoises, you're in the right place. This whole podcast is about sea life that's been stranded on a beach. And sometimes we talk about the video games we're playing, the video games that we are beating. This is the Polykill Podcast. I'm Trav. And that guy over there that loves putting his squishy tuchus meat into some into some beans. That's Steve. That's Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I think that's our fastest start to tuchus meat ratio of all time. Like the we're measuring it in seconds, not even minutes. So we're doing good.
You know, tuchus meat's just fun to say. And if I can find an excuse to name this podcast tuchus meat, like maybe we don't stop saying it for the next hour plus, it's fine by me. All right. Let's move into games coming out that we might want to play someday. And I was impressed that in this here upcoming 2 weeks between March 16, 2021, year of our Lord, to March 29th, a lot more games coming out than usual. It's nice, compact, not compact, that's the opposite. It's a nice, big, long, girthy list of titles. Not all of them great, but it's nice to see video games hit the shelves again.
Yeah, I was kind of taken back for a second, too, and then I thought, it's probably like a end of the fiscal year thing, right? Like, public companies are closing their books for 2020, financial year 2020 at the end of March 2021. So anything that they've had pending release, good or not, it's like, well, time to get it out there and write it off for last year so we can start fresh.
That's a smart person speculation. I have no idea if you're right or wrong, but so each of us here, we have a couple games apiece, and you know, if it weren't for this list that we comb through every couple weeks, I mean, you may be on the heartbeat of what's coming out. I'm always, every time I scroll down that list, I'm surprised. I'm like, what the hell is this? What the hell is that? Who is this? This is coming out? What is that? So I have a couple games here I didn't know about until 25 minutes ago. The first one is called Paradise Lost. Now, Paradise Lost, the one that I'm familiar with, is actually a documentary about some murders that took place in Arkansas. And that's not going to make for a fun video game at all. And then there's Paradise Lost, like the book the poem itself, written by John Milton, which is even more popular. So what is this game possibly about? It's post-World War II, alternative fiction, post-World War II, and you're a kid exploring the aftermath of the fallout from that war, which I thought was a pretty interesting idea.
Interesting. That feels like the name of a game that should have already been out, right? Like, how did we get to 2021? And there hasn't been other games named Paradise Lost yet. Isn't that one already taken?
I know. You would think so. I mean, again, there's poems, there's vicious, murdery documentaries. No video game yet. No video game yet. So
interesting. Well, definitely one that has certainly not been taken. This is the first time this game title has been used. Balan Wonderworld's coming out. So I don't know if you're pumped. I'm pretty pumped about this one. When I was going through, you know, building the top 10 games in 96, you know, people on the podcast here, they heard the top five. But there were five more that came after that. And right after that cutoff that we didn't get to talk about was Nights into Dreams. And so here we are, however many decades later, and the same creative minds behind Nights into Dreams is putting together a 3D platformer, a genre I really like. So I'm excited for this one to come out. I know after the demo released, people played it, and it was pretty lukewarm, and people weren't really, like, too pumped for it to come out at that point. But I'm still looking forward to it. I kept my pre-order. Still going to enjoy it.
It looks pretty. It looks colorful, zany, weird.
Yeah.
I think it'll be okay.
I think going in, I know it's going to be kind of just janky and rough, but the parts I'm excited for, like the colorful, whimsical world, they'll still be there. So we'll just enjoy the good parts.
It's all you can do, man. It's all you can do. Balan Wonderland. Wonderworld. Balan? Balan? How do you say that?
Balan, I think. I should know because they shout it at the beginning and end of every trailer. Balan Wonderworld.
Oh. Okay, great. So B-A-L-A-N. Okay, great. Okay. Interesting. My other game is Black Legend, which again, how's that not the first video game's name? Black Legend.
Yeah, that one came out of like a video game name generator.
Yeah. And that's kind of worries me about it. I feel like games that, like, this sounds like a game that you would see an ad for on Instagram that you download on your phone. Download Black Legend now and you get three free turns or something. But no, it's a isometric tactical strategy type game. It's coming out on pretty much everything. The fives, the fours, the Xs, the Ss, the ones, the switches, the PCs on March 25th. And it looks pretty cool. It's like pirates and fucking 18th century, maybe 19th century dudes fighting it out.
Sign me up for that, especially if it's got like a little bit of a pirates thing going on.
I think it does. Again, I looked at these 25 minutes ago and basing everything I'm saying off four screenshots, but it looks okay.
Something about strategy games. When I was younger, I played Age of Empires. I played StarCraft, messed around with Command and Conquer. I got into all those. And then for 20 years, I've been nostalgic for strategy games. And other than StarCraft 2, I just basically have never played another one. They always seem so exhausting to pick up and get into. So maybe this is the one. Probably not, but maybe.
I mean, they're the type of games that you'll have fun for the first like 4 hours, and that's where they get you. You know, it's like that first hit of crack cocaine.
Yep.
But then it'll hit this difficulty spike. But you won't know it's hard until you've played a map for like 40 minutes. And then you're like, oh no, I made a mistake at minute 3 that I'll never recover from. And now all the wind is out of my sails at that point. I don't want to redo all that. I don't want to see the game again. It's dead to me at that point. That's so much time to have to redo something. That's usually how those things end for me. So it's very rare that I finish any, but I always love the first hit of crack cocaine, as most people do. Modern games like this do a little bit better with checkpointing and saving and stuff like that. So the modern amenities of gaming have made it much better. But man, some of those classic ones really bruise the old taint with some of the steep, you know, asking you to redo sections over again. Oh boy, not for me. But
yeah,
this one looks okay.
I think too that strategy games are right up there with fighting games. For the second you play the multiplayer, you're already worse than everyone else because people that play the multiplayer are really dedicated to that specific game and get really good at it. So you just never stand a chance, which is why you just play with your friends or you just play the single player.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's a genre of game out there that I feel comfortable introducing another human being into my life with.
You know what you do then? If you don't want to play competitive against someone, you play the last game that I'm excited for here. It Takes Two, which is a co-op game. This is the
Love it.
The next game by Hazelight. So they did A Way Out, I don't know if you've ever played that one.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it has the very evocative and flamboyant fella there that's always being interviewed by Jeff Keighley, right? Isn't he the guy responsible for those?
I think so, yes. But just like with the last game, the shtick of this one is that it is built from the ground up to be a co-op game. So you can't play it single player. I think when you buy a copy, you get a download code to give someone else a copy so that you can play with someone. And it's you working together with someone to get through. This one has a lot more lighthearted tone. It's like a lot funnier. It seems like comedy is a bigger component than the other one, which was like a prison escape game. It kind of reminds me of maybe Tearaway, Sackboy, something in that realm. And they do good co-op games. At least they did a good co-op game, and it seems like a really fun one to play with Leah, so I will probably pick it up so she and I can play through it together.
Very, very cool. That guy's name is Joseph Ferris, by the way.
Perfect.
And interesting fella. But you're right, yeah, Way Out was a lot of fun. I like that concept. I prefer my prison game that I want to make will be much darker, brooding, and scary. But that was very cool. I did appreciate that. And he's a funny guy. I'm interested to see what this is.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it turns out.
Yeah, what all does that come out on again?
Systems. You'd think I would know. Probably Switch, PS4, PS5. Who knows?
You don't do your homework around here, buddy. I got it here. It's a PS5, all the Xboxes, everything except Switch.
I shouldn't have said Switch after I said everything. Otherwise, I would have been correct.
Yeah, you dummy. Okay, let's get those sweet, supple cheeks of yours into a seat that will get them warm, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay, in the theme of today's show, and by the way, we're heating up your tuchus meat. Bring that back. In the spirit of today's show, I got to ask you, do you remember your first pet?
I do, yes. I'm not going to tell you the name, because that's frequently one of my three security questions that I use on websites, but I do know my pet.
Was its name Tuchus Meat?
No, but it's not as far from Tuchus Meat as you might think.
Wow, interesting. I don't know why I asked if you remembered your first pet. Is there anyone out there that's like, no, first pet doesn't ring a bell. Does not ring a bell. I didn't even love it. I was kind of a psychopath as a child. It did live until I was 15, but I don't remember it much.
Maybe you had a lizard or something that died when you were two. So you technically don't remember. But yeah, it was a little, I don't even know what type of dog it was, but it was a little white, my memory of it is halfway between a poodle and a miniature schnauzer. Very yippy little dog.
Like a Spitz or something? I don't know. I don't know dogs.
Yeah, neither do I.
Spitz is a dog that I do know of. Actually, that's funny. My first dog, it wasn't my first dog, but a dog that I had when I was a kid was a Spitz, and we named him Spitz because we were very creative people.
It's like naming your dog.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so your next question here. You've been bitten by a zombie. What do you do now? Are you telling people? What are you doing? You hiding? What are you doing? You offing yourself? What are you doing? You going to go around biting people? What the fuck are you doing?
No, I'd probably just have someone put me out, right? It's just, I'm not made to live in a zombie apocalypse. Everyone likes to do the thought experiment of, what would you do in a zombie apocalypse? Oh, I'd head to the Lowe's and I'd get this stuff. I'd head down to the gun store and I'd pick up a couple of rifles. I would just die. I'm made for this world, not for that one. So I would just end it there and leave resources for the people that maybe can last a little longer in a world like that.
That's very thoughtful of you. If I were bitten by a zombie, I would track down the last person to leave me an angry comment on an S Friend video and go to their house and bite the shit out of them. That's what I would do. For the greater good.
I see you're holding grudges even in the post-apocalyptic world, so good to know.
Somebody's got to.
Well,
the whole we're all in this together charade doesn't fly with me. I'm biting people I hate, just the way it is. You can only listen to one song for the rest of your life. Is it Bohemian Rhapsody or M-Bop?
Ooh. I mean, it's Bohemian Rhapsody, but I have to think, it's Bohemian Rhapsody because I feel I'll have M-Bop stuck in my head most of the time anyways, as soon as somebody mentions it. And the version that plays in your head and the version you hear are functionally the same. Like, I don't need that specific pitch. I just need me going, So, Bohemian Rhapsody is an actually good song.
Yes, and I feel like when I sing along with that song in the car, I'm fucking killing it. But when I sing it by myself in the garage, I'm not really doing a good job. It's weird. Okay, you die suddenly of a heart attack, and a loved one finds you. This is very sad.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but you've died, okay? Would you rather them find you sprawled over a heaping pile of sex toys or surrounded by all your drug paraphernalia?
Oh, sex toys, 100%. Every time.
Really?
Yeah, I want them to know that so? I went out doing what I love. Like, I want to make sure that I was...
Yourself?
Explain the big smile on my face as they find my body laying there. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Okay. Your hero and the target of your teenage sexual fantasies was Tom DeLonge of Blink-182, who is an avid believer in the existence of aliens. Where do you stand on aliens? And if I've asked you this before, give a more memorable answer this time.
Isn't the solution to have more memorable questions? But
I'm so sorry.
No.
But where do you, I'm just always curious where people stand on aliens.
This is not the first time this week that we've talked about this. Not you and me, but me and someone in my life. There is definitely other life out somewhere in the universe, because the universe is like impossibly massive and hard to comprehend. But I do not think that we have been visited by aliens that look like little green or little gray dudes with big eyes. If there are aliens out there that exist, they're not abducting us. They don't care. They're either going to stumble across us on accident and it's going to be a big to-do and they're not going to be that sly about it, or they're so smart that they've mastered interstellar travel. Like, they probably would visit us in a way that we couldn't even understand. Like, they're probably beyond what we as humans can conceptualize. Like, all we can imagine is an alien that is a variation of something that we are or have known. But they could be anything. We just don't know. Expand your mind.
I agree. We always imagine aliens with eyes and legs and arms, and that doesn't have to be the case.
Yeah, like, it doesn't have to be, what if they had eyes, but weird eyes, like, bigger than we're used to. It's not going to be like that.
Yeah, I agree. But unlike you, I actually think, I think the human race is half alien, half not alien. And I think it's up to us to find out who's who. Okay. Coming up, nope, what do we got next? Oh, that was the hot seat. Okay, your tuchus is okay?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the hottest seats we've had, that's somewhere in the middle. I made it through that one just fine.
For everyone who can't see, Steve actually does move around in his seat and touch his butt when I ask that question. So he really does check the temp on it, and I appreciate that. I just want everyone else to know that he's really going that extra mile.
An honest man.
I mean, you really are. All right, what games are we even playing, man? I mean, we got a podcast here about video games, and we're all we're doing is talk about butt meat. I mean, what video games are we up to?
Oh, we got all kinds of them going on. So I've been playing a little bit of a spread here, some different stuff. First up, a game that I am very anxious to get back to, Hyperlight Drifter. So, as I always do, I got to ask, have you played it?
I've not played it. It's been recommended to me more than a handful of times, so maybe I should?
It's really freaking good.
Okay.
So, it very pretty, very pixel arty. It's hard to describe, but it's the type of indie game that has an aesthetic that is very specific to itself, and yet it looks like what your kind of common conception of what an indie game would be. But what I really love about this game is the world that you're in. Oh my gosh, it's so cool. There's so much variety to everything that you find. And it's got the same like kind of quiet, like the same mystery and like general just sort of like sense of uncertainty that is persistent in games like Eco or like Shadow of the Colossus or Ueda games, things like that, where it's just, There's obviously more going on in this world than what you're able to see and play and encounter, but you're like putting little pieces of it together and you're trying to figure out what's going on in a world with very little dialogue and very little context, and it's just, I get so lost in the mystery of those types of things. It's been a huge treat. I was streaming it for the first time. A friend of mine wanted me to play this, and so I streamed it. And usually I end my streams at like 10 my time. And I ended up like doubling my stream length and going until like 1:30 in the morning just because I couldn't put this game down. I got real addicted.
You sandwiched me that night. Was that sandwich night?
That was sandwich night.
Yeah, because you, correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am, but do you stream every Friday night?
Yeah. Yep.
You do? Okay. Maybe it was Saturday I was thinking of before. You don't stream on Saturdays?
I do not.
Okay, great. So I popped out on a Friday and was like, "Yo, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it tonight. I'm gonna strizime." And I pop on. I see you're on. I'm like, "Let's watch Steve a little bit. Let's, you know, I like to imitate the great. I like to aspire." So I get on there and I watch Steve for a little bit. Ooh, Hyperlight Drifter. It seems neat. All right, I'm gonna hop on. I'm gonna do my thing. I'm gonna try this. And I put a solid 2 hours in of NES stuff. Crowd's going wild. Ladies up front are showing their boobies. Guys are throwing their underwear on stage. It's great. It's a great stream. It was fantastic. I come down, unplug. Whew, good night. Towel off in the green room. Folks are high-fiving me. I get back on the bus. I go home. It's a great stream. You're still on. I pop back on. You're still on. What the hell is Steve still doing? You're still out there playing that Hyperlight Drifter. Was that a one? Or did you finish it that night? I guess not. You're still playing it, right? So,
no.
Are you close?
No, I'm probably maybe halfway, if even. The game is set up kind of like, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of Majora's Mask or something. There's a center town, and then in each of the four cardinal directions, there's different biomes that you're exploring and doing stuff in. And I got through two of them, and I started on the third. So I assume that there's still a good half of the game left.
I mean, is this a Zelda-like game? Is that what we're dealing with here?
It wouldn't be wrong to say that, but I think that you'd be tricking people into thinking it's a different type of game than it is by saying that. So it is.
I don't want to oversimplify it, but I do want to use some broad references just to hone in on what it is, because visually it's kind of crazy. It gives me like the palette is a very 80s vibe to me. It's a lot of pinks and neons and Blade Runner-y type aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But from the looks of it, it looks like a Zelda-like, just looking at some of these stills. But what else is here?
It's more about what isn't there that makes it more of a Zelda game. When I think of Zelda, it definitely has the sort of like top-down perspective, you're slashing enemies with a sword, that type of thing. But mm-hmm. Hyperlight Drifter has a much bigger focus on like dashing to avoid attacks. You have a gun that you can kind of like twin stick shoot out into different spots. And it doesn't have puzzles and dungeons in the way that Zelda does. Like, you get different weapons over the course of the game, but you're not going halfway through a dungeon and getting like a pair of iron boots that'll let you go through the water area now. It's more just fighting your way through, exploring, stuff like that. It actually...
I got you.
It has a lot in common with, like, Fez. One, because Disaster Piece does the soundtrack, which is the same guy who did the soundtrack for Fez. But also, it has a lot of, like, things to find and uncover that make you, one, feel smart for having noticed them, and then, two, wonder, like, ooh, what else is going on in this place? Like, there's some mysteries afoot. So, I'm obviously very early in that part of it, but I just want to go back. I just want to play more. But I did the thing, and you probably will encounter this now, but I did the thing where I chained that game to streams. Now I have to stream if I want to play it, because people have been watching me play through it, and I gotta give them the full playthrough. Now I can't play it all weekend like I want to. Amateur move.
Well, I was curious about that, because I was like, Can this fella here, my good buddy Steve, can he just sit down and enjoy a game by his damn self if he wants to? And I'm sure you do. I'm sure those Saturdays are full of finally you're like, oh, I don't have to wear a shirt, and you get to play whatever game you want. But on those stream nights, once you get one going, you're like, well, I can't play this again until Tuesday or Monday or whatever night or Sunday. I don't know when you switch stream. If I haven't made that obvious twice already, I don't know when it is. My phone just says blinks on, and then I go see. But I was obviously being very facetious talking up my streaming experiences. I don't have any attachment to streaming at all. I don't announce it. I'm just now building up the comfort of even doing it. And I think the other night when I did it, I crossed that threshold of, okay, I think I feel comfortable talking to no one in my room now, was the thing.
Hmm.
So I've just crossed that, like, I've just grown a little bit in comfort, but I don't know that it's ever going to be a regular thing, or that I'm definitely not going to attach games to it. I'm not going to become a regular like you, Steve. I just do it for occasional fun.
You're not going to set like a Friday night NES streams or anything like that? It's just going to be a perk for people that are paying attention?
Until, if I ever reach a point where I'm like really comfortable and excited to do it, sure. But for now, it's like, it's just based on mood, more or less. Like, oh, I could really go for some socialization, and I got a funny bone I want to flex, or I'm feeling specifically like I really want to play a certain game, but I'm not really in it to beat it, and I don't really need it for any podcast. I just kind of want to play it. That'd be a good opportunity to throw it on stream. So yeah, I don't. But you living by that schedule, whew, it's admirable.
Honestly, sticking to the schedule is the main thing that I wanted to do. So I've been happy that I have been able to. But I think of streaming as like the least efficient form of social media you possibly could ever have, because you stream for 3 hours and, you know, you meet some people, you make some friends, you talk to them, and then you go hang out in their stream sometimes too. And it's like one conversation that would exist across three tweets has to exist first in my stream and then in their stream and then in my stream. And it's just, I mean, obviously you're going back and forth in the stream too, but it's like to really go back and forth like that takes so long, but it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had a lot of fun the other night. It was on my EverDrive. We were, we played some Road Blasters, which is an NES game that I fancy quite a bit. It's pretty simple. It's easy to chat while doing it. I'm not taking it serious. I don't care if I die constantly and don't win. But we also played a little game at the end where give me a letter and we'll zip to that page on my EverDrive of Famicom games.
Ooh.
And we're just going to play something random that none of us have ever heard of or can pronounce. And then we play that, and then it's all in Japanese, and hilarity ensues because no one knows what's happening. So that was a good time.
That sounds fun. It also sounds like a recipe to just end up on a lot of visual novels that you can't read.
That happened 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of games, though, that we're playing now, the Discord, the Polykill Discord, which has, I guess, transformed itself into just being the Polymedia-wide Discord. We have a high score section now. And people have been vying for some top spots on those high scores. And so we said, okay, we're gonna have some mainstays in this high score thing. So we got our Pac-Mans, our Tetrises, and our Donkey Kongs. Those are just persistent, always going to be there, classic high score battle games. But then every month we're going to add a couple more, and people are going to, you know, suggest games they want to play high scores on. So anyway, to start out, for this month we had, you know, Tetris, again, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, and then we had Joust as one of our first monthly additions. And so I've been playing a lot of those games, which don't help this podcast at all because, I mean, you can quote-unquote beat those games if you get like a kill screen, but come on, I'm not getting there. In my lifetime, I'm not going to get there. So I've just been playing a lot of those, trying to get some high scores, man. And I tell you, high score chasing is such a time eater. I don't really think about that. Yeah. But like you think about your Civilizations and your One More Turns, even your Sims, your Sim Cities, your One More Turn games will really get the clock moving. But a high score thing, like when you start out and you're like, oh, I've already screwed it up, hit reset, got to start over again. Oh, got to hit reset. I got really far this time, got to hit reset. You might not even finish a game for like an hour, but you don't realize that. You think you've only been playing for 10 minutes because you've been hitting reset the whole time.
It's pretty similar to speedrunning in that way, right? Like when you think about it, speedrunning is just basically like, it's just kind of creating a version of a high score table in a game that doesn't have score. It's just another thing, and it's same concepts apply where, you know, when you're going for a high score in Tetris or something, maybe you have a really good run that doesn't quite beat your high score but gets close. It's like you're gonna go right back in and you're gonna do it again because you're like, oh, I felt it, I saw the potential, like I was this close to getting it and I made a mistake that I know I could correct next time, so I know I have it in me, let's go back and do it again. But you don't realize, oh, I'm also signing myself to do all the parts that are easy leading up to that point, which eat up a bunch of my time.
Exactly. Yeah. The tricks you play on yourself when you just want to win something meaningless.
Yeah. And I mean, people have been putting up some impressive scores in the Discord. I want to see, I don't think I can compete with some of those top scores, but I want to see what I can put up in Tetris. I'm hoping that sometime during like the stream schedule this week, I can take one of those days and try and do some high score chasing. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like none of us are like pros at any of these games. We just kind of started the high score thing. We already have a guy that's over 200,000 in Tetris, which is crazy. Oof. I looked it up, and like people are like, yeah, that usually takes like a couple months of hard play to start getting your 200Ks in, like the hardcore Tetris lingo. Like, holy shit. So, yeah, good luck.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you. Well, we'll see how it goes. Let me ask you a question. When you play games, do you like to have fun?
Yeah, I think that that is operative for me.
What if I told you I could give you a game that isn't fun at all? Would you want to play that game?
Well, here's an example. I played Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. I didn't think that was fun, but I thought it was interesting enough to play through.
All right, so we're talking the same concept here. I've been playing through Walking Dead Season 2. I played Season 1 a decade ago. And I'll be honest, I don't even really remember what choices I made. But I was like, there's 4 seasons of this game. I loved the first one. I should finally go back and play Season 2. And I booted it up. I played the first episode. And it is so much harder to play than I remember. Not because the game is bad. Not for any technical reasons. Like, it's a well-made game. It's very well-produced. It's very well put together. Like, it's competent. It is, like, mechanically solid. It's just being... It's just like the Last of Us Part 2 thing. It's like being willing to just watch a bunch of bad stuff happen back to back to back based on decisions that I'm making in real time. It's just... Ugh. I get anxious going in, and then I do it, and then I feel bad coming out, and I wonder, why am I doing this? I think it's fun, but is it? What even is fun anymore?
I think those games are fun. I think there's something about the decision making and some of the, like, the like you said, the story's well written. I like the twists and turns. I think that stimulates me enough to be fun in some way. I mean, it's not fun like I'm shooting basketball in the backyard kind of fun, but it's still, I don't know, it's engaging enough to qualify as fun for me.
Yeah, engaging is a good word. Or like enjoyable. I just feel like fun, when you think of like, what does fun look like? If you ask a kid to draw you a picture of fun, they're going to draw like Fall Guys. They're not going to draw Walking Dead Season 2. But
Right.
I mean,
but you're liking it.
I am really liking it, and I very much, for as much crap as I'm giving it, I will see it all the way through, and I'm happy to be playing it. It's just, I was surprised at like how much of a, I don't know, emotional barrier, whatever you want to call it. Like, I really had to kind of get a run up to it to start playing, and then after I did one episode, I was so like, oh, I can let myself off the hook. I can stop for tonight. I'll go back and play the next episode tomorrow. Whew, I did a good job. Way to go.
I really would set aside like the 2 hours, sometimes a little plus, sometimes the episodes were much longer, yeah. But those are games I really look forward to, like clear the schedule, 2 hours, honey, don't bug me, I'm about to go downstairs in the complete darkness with my big thick headphones on, buried underneath a big blanket, and I'm going to play through this, and like, I don't want any distractions, I'm playing the whole episode, we're not getting, you know, nothing's going to interfere, like I really was super duper into that series specifically, and you just reminded me how sad it is that Telltale is no longer with us, but
I know.
But yeah, dude. I hope you enjoy it because that season is fun. It's fun. It's crazy fun.
It's funny you say, like, you telling your wife, like, I'm going to go down. I'm going to do this thing. Just leave me in my space. I played it and I kind of didn't give Leah fair warning. Like, she knows what Walking Dead is and she knew I was going to play it, but she's just kind of sitting in the room with me having to experience it, even though she didn't choose to play it. And after the first episode, we kind of like came to a soft agreement where she's like, maybe, I don't know, maybe just play this when I'm not around and tell me what happened. Cause that was pretty intense.
And, yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
And I was like, ah, that's fair. But no, it's really, it's living up to what the first one was so far. Like it is really well done. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Awesome. I'm so happy you're playing it.
Yeah.
So the other one for me that I'm cooking on, I just started her and it's probably one of those that I'll pick up now and I'll put it down for a little bit and forget about it for 4 years and come back to it later and not remember where I was and start over. But yeah, anyway, it's Return of the Oberdin. I got the Switch version.
Ugh.
I like playing stuff on the Switch. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the Switch. And have you played Return of the Oberdin?
I love Return of the Oberdin. One of my favorite puzzle games.
Oh, it's great. So yeah, for those not in the know, it's this really oddly stylized game. It's basically very high contrast, almost black and white and you're on a ship, and it sounds boring when you describe how they describe it, which is like, you know, like a mid 18th century tax adjuster who looks at ships or something. Yep. I don't know. But it's so much more than that. Like you essentially discover these skeletons on a boat, and you have some ability to replay like the last moment before the death occurred. And it's your goal. You have like a manifest of who was on the ship and some pictures, and you got to put together like who these people were, how they died, who killed them. And it's right up my alley. It's just enough fun fiction and just enough investigative Sherlock Holmesian that scratches a few itches. So it's really interesting. I didn't make it very far into it, and I'm pretty sure I'm wrong about everything so far, but that hasn't stopped me yet. So I'm pretty excited about going forward with it. It plays really well on the Switch too.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll be really happy to hear as you go through. Have you reached the point? So one thing that I think that game does really intelligently is you're trying to guess, you know, the fates of these different people, and you have to guess, I think, who they were, how they died, and what or who killed them.
Mm-hmm. Who or what, yeah.
And you can guess these things, and it doesn't tell you if you're right or wrong until you've successfully guessed all of those things for three different people. And yep. The like way that the screen like switches and the sound effects and the big like kind of the pageantry, the big to-do that they make of locking in those three correct guesses, it's just such a good feeling. It's like all-time, just the little feel-good chemicals that shoot out of your brain. It's just some of the best.
Yeah, I've only had that happen once. I mean, it's very early in the game. I think they make those first three probably a little easier than the ones after that. But yeah, they got me hooked. So I'm excited to go forward. Hopefully, I'm able to do that and I don't get distracted by something else. But you never know. You never really know, do you?
I hope you stick with it. It's one of those games where the more time you put between the last time you played it and the next time you play it, the worse off you're going to be because your brain's going to lose track of all the information it was holding. So,
yeah, that's true.
Well, I mean, the only other thing I've been cooking on is Knight's Apprentice, which we talked about last time. And really, I just want to reiterate, this game's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool game. Having a
lot
of fun
with game. It's on the Xbox.
It did the thing where I got to what I kind of thought was going to be the end. And then they said, oh, actually, you have to go back and revisit each area to kind of like do one thing or meet one objective.
Oh, game, don't do that to me. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
So it's stretching itself a little bit, but I got so close. I'm confident I'll finish it up here. It should show up on the beats by the next time we discuss video games together.
And again, that's the one that's on the OG Xbox, right?
Yeah.
We couldn't find anything else about it. It's a very mysterious game.
It's like just kind of appeared on shelves one day. No one knows anything about the company that developed it. No one's ever played it, and no one will ever talk about it again after this podcast. So,
I mean, just looking at the cover, I would suspect that it was very much in the vein of like a Fable.
Yeah.
Did you say it was kind of like Fable?
It's got some of the tone of Fable, but it plays like a Maximo game. That's the best
right,
comparison.
Right, you said that. Okay. Very cool.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. So the only thing the only other thing that I'm working on is the original Breath of Fire on the Super Nintendo. And man, oh man, a little bit sloggy. Little sloggy. Have you played that one?
Yes, but so long ago that I don't remember it. And I don't remember it being sloggy, but I also played it when I was like a teenager on the Game Boy Advance. So my impression of what sloggy meant might have been very different back then.
I'm going to make an analogy, but it's going to require me to ask you questions first. Did you ever play Karate Kid on the NES?
Nope.
All right. How about Link 2?
Like the Adventures of Link?
Zelda 2. Yeah.
Never heard anyone call it Link 2.
Sorry. Zelda 2 Adventures of Link. Sorry.
That is a video game I have played, yes.
Great. You know when like you're in those areas in that game where you're like in the swamp and you can't walk fast, you have to jump, and there's birds and they keep swooping down and hitting you in the face, and it's so painful and you want to get out of those sections really fast.
Yep.
That's Breath of Fire all the time.
Ooh.
Your player, your party, it's a top-down RPG. It's nothing like that game I just described, but it's a top-down classic turn-based RPG, but your party moves very slow and it's random encounters constantly, and it feels like you're just wading through mud, getting hit in the face by birds incessantly. And it's insane how fast this rate of random events generates, because honestly, I'm not over exaggerating. It's almost every four steps.
It's like and, Skies of Arcadia level.
Yeah. And I've not played that, but is that one notorious for its random encounter rate?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So this one, I would be surprised if it's more than this one, because if you're outside in the overworld, it's a little more forgiving. You can maybe get like 10 steps in, but you know, you'll like see where you're going out in the distance. You're like, I'm going to get hit four times before even fucking get there. But if you go inside a tower, sometimes it's insane. It's seriously like as soon as the screen ends, you take a step, boom, you're back in a battle. It's like, what the hell? I can get so discombobulated from so many random battles, I forget which way I was going. I'm like, ah, shit. And I don't want to go back the wrong way, the way I just came. It's paralyzing sometimes. But all that said, like that, it is a slog. Oh, it's grueling. I'm still having fun with it because I like the way it sounds, the way it looks. The story's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's scratching an itch. I really, for the whole of 1996 there, I got an itch toward the end to really sink my teeth in a turn-based RPG. Like, I really wanted to be abused by 16-bit boredom. And the one didn't come out that year other than Super Mario RPG, which I'd already played. So I was looking forward to one. I want to get into the Breath of Fire series because while I don't have two, I do have 3 and 4 on the PlayStation. And so it's a series I want to get a little further into because I hear people say great things about those other ones. But I'm sometimes hard to convince not to play the first one for the sake of the sequels. And this was a case where I didn't take that advice. I jumped right into the first one. But it's other than the hit rate, it's not that bad.
Well, I would say that I think my memory of the later ones is that it does improve in that regard. Or at the very least, I don't recall any of them having a really rough encounter rate, so I've either forgot them all equally or they do get better. So
very good. Very, very good. Okay. Well, let's plug ourselves because goddammit, it just feels good.
Yes,
I love it.
Right in our Tookus meats.
Yes. If you like what you're hearing so far, be sure to check us out on our website at polymedianetwork.com for more shows. We got this network hangout show that we do called Off Kilter. I sometimes don't even know if it's still happening, but it exists on that website. You can find Drunk Friend. It's where Alex of SNES Drunk and I get together. We interview other creators in the space. Sometimes we just have episodes where we just talk to each other. But lately, we've interviewed Johnny Ethco of Neebs Gaming, which is a very popular YouTube channel, and Michael B. the Game Genie, who you might know. If you listen to this and you've heard some Cartridge Club podcast, you've heard Michael B. the Game Genie. We chat with him about all of those arcade one-up caps he has. It's very interesting.
Also got PD's Power Hour, currently in Season 2. Last episode of that one was with Cannot Be Tamed with Pam's Mom, which I'm pretty sure that is a podcast exclusive. Without actually knowing the answer, I can't imagine that she's been on many other podcasts. So
I think you are correct. So that is a Polymedia Network-wide exclusive.
Exclusive.
And very exclusive to Petey's Power Hour. And you should also check out Petey's YouTube channel. She's been doing a lot of cool stuff there, too. Also, check out Tales of the Lesser Medium, if you would. If you want to hear a bad story, but maybe laugh a lot while listening to it, Caleb J. Ross does such a good job on that Half-Life series that we just put out. I think you'll really like it. I think you'll like all of what we've done there. But that Half-Life, really, really something special there. Pretty funny.
That show, I've always enjoyed it, but the show only gets better as time goes on. Like, you have gotten funnier. Or Caleb has gotten funnier. So
I think, it's just Caleb has gotten funnier. I'm still shit.
Hey. I didn't say that, buddy. That's my friend Trav you're talking about, all right? But once you're completely done, you've gone through the whole run of Tales of the Lesser Medium 2 or 3 times, and you're like, all right, I'm willing to entertain another podcast for a while. You can listen to Indie Quest, which is our show all about indie games. We talk about indie games, sometimes ones that just came out, sometimes ones that came out a while ago, and we kind of curate a list of what we think are some of the coolest ones that you should check out. So, yeah, please check that out while you're doing it. Leave that show, this show, any show on the network, a review on iTunes, give us the old 5 stars or however many you think we deserve, and say a little something nice about the show. We always appreciate it, and it helps us out a lot.
It does. And we're not just saying that because it's something that you say at some point in a podcast. Please do that. Please, please do that. It really does help. Polykill also has a Patreon. Visit patreon.com/polykill. Find a tier that works for you there if you're interested in helping us out. The first tier will get you in the Discord. You can hang out with Steve and I. We have a whole section about getting fit and memes and all kinds of fun nonsense and high scores. If you think you can top 218,000 in Tetris, show us what you're made of.
Yeah, please do. And if you want to reach out to the show, you can do so via email at polykillpodcast@gmail.com. We're desperate for attention. We love to hear from you because it lets us know that you even exist, that there is at least one person out there that hears this, that we're not just shouting our echoey voices off into the nothing. And we'll be happy to read it on the show as long as it's, you know, not specifically mean about both of us. If it's mean about one of us, we'll read it. But if it's mean about both of us, then we might not.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I can't argue that. It's perfect.
That's fair.
All right, let's get into some games that we've completed. Let's get into some games that we've completed. Sorry, I'm trying to zest it up here. I felt the energy drop there for a second, and my heart rate monitor started to beep. Okay, so I beat a couple games. One of them I finished on stream. You know how we do us professional streamers. Those guys who are very good at streaming. We get on there, we finish games for the people. People were chanting. They were going, Travis, and I pulled it out in Guerrilla War, which you can't actually lose in because it has infinite continues, and it doesn't give you an option to not continue. It says continue, yes, and there's no. You have to do it. So
that's a perfect stream game. You're set up for success.
I did that on purpose. And so we beat Guerrilla War, which is it's fun because, and I'll probably play that on stream like 3 times a year. It was the very first game that I beat as a kid. I want to say when I found out that I could beat a video game, when my brother handed that one down to me. My brother's much older than me. He's 18 years older than me. I was 6, and I didn't understand that, like, if I just kept playing, I'd win. I kept, like, quitting because I kept dying a lot and was like, this is hard. He was like, dude, you know you can beat that, right? Like, you just keep playing it, and eventually you'll just beat it. It won't let you not beat it. And I was like, really? I could beat a video game? Because I was playing Mario's and Zelda's. They were kicking my ass. I wasn't beating those. But I finally beat Guerrilla War, and the catharsis of beating a video game, I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I've been high on that for 29 years. That's why I have a podcast, and I have to thank Guerrilla War for it. And a pretty fun game. And if you're not familiar with it, it's like Akari Warriors, but maybe slightly more polished. It's an SNK game. You've fight your way through Cuba as some resistance fighters who seem oddly familiar. They look a lot like Che Guevara, and pretty fun time.
I don't know that I could possibly tell you, like, if you showed me screenshots of 3 or 4 NES games, I don't think I could pick Guerrilla War out of a lineup. It's just a game that I know exists that I know nothing about, but at the very least I'm glad to hear that it sets you on a very dark path in your life for being obsessed with beats.
It's true. I have another vivid memory of having that cartridge and asking my sister, who was also older than me but dumber, and I said, what does this say? Because I was like 6, and gorilla spelled that way is not intuitive. And she's like, I think it says Guerrilla War. And I was like, it can't be that because there's no gorillas in this game. I've played through it. And I had like a whole argument with her about it. I obviously didn't know what a guerrilla warfighter was, and I don't think she did either. So we had a very, you know, incomprehensible conversation about what the hell was going on in this game and where the gorillas were. And she's 11 years older than me. So,
well, speaking of what the hell's going on in this game, I played through Maquette, which is a puzzle game very much focused around the concept of what the hell is going on. People call it, and by people I mean the internet, calls it a recursive puzzle game, which means basically nothing to me. But the idea is, imagine that it's kind of like the Russian nesting dolls in a way. Imagine that you had sitting on your desk a like miniature but to scale model of your house. And then within that model, there was a really tiny model to scale of your house. And so the way that you traverse the world in this game is you're kind of like moving between those different layers, moving objects in and out of them to kind of manipulate their size and let you ultimately go from A to B. So you need to, you know, you grab this little tiny staircase out of this dollhouse, and then you go, you bring it, you drop it on the ground, and then you go pick it up out of the model and set it back outside, pick it up a second time, and now it's a huge staircase that you can use for yourself to climb up into the second story of this building. Very weird, very kind of like mind-bendy puzzles. And then they start to layer stuff on top of that too. And It was pretty fun. I was looking forward to it for a long time. It's an Annapurna Interactive published game, so I'm always going to be interested there. And I think that they did a pretty good job. It's not like a Sayonara Wild Hearts or an Elder Wilds. It's not like a top tier Annapurna published game for me, but lived up to my expectations, and it was a lot of fun. So if you like mind-bendy puzzle games, check it out. And it's on PS Plus right now, so specifically if you have a PS5, it's on PS Plus. So you can get it for free.
Very cool, yeah. I caught you playing that one on stream as well, so I'm happy that you finished it without too much guff or guidance from our dear friend Caleb J. Ross, who got this one early.
Yeah, he had a little bit of an exclusive. We were talking about Caleb's beat tweets 2 weeks ago on this game.
I know.
And I'm just
insane.
Trying to play catch-up.
Ah, sometimes you have to play catch-up.
Yeah. But another one that I played here that is a little less enjoyable, I'd say. It's a game called Drive, Drive, Drive. And this is a racing game that I only own because back in the early days of Limited Run, I was a little looser with what I thought I'd be interested in when buying a Phys Dish. You know, I'd see something that was even just a little interesting, and I'd be like, kind of get swept up a little bit in the hype of it and be like, well, I'll check that out. Let's get that game. And so this is one that I bought back then, sat on the shelf, never did anything with it. And I finally pulled it down like, I should at least understand what this game is if it's going to be in my collection. And I put it in. Conceptually, really cool idea. It's a racing game, an arcade racing game, and you are racing anywhere from 2 to 4 tracks simultaneously. So you're racing on one, and then there's AI controlling the racers on the other tracks. And then you have a button that you can swap between any of those at any time. So the idea is you're trying to win all of those races all at one time. You're trying to be like in first on 3 tracks against 3 different sets of opponents. And, they start to do like a Hot Wheels thing where the tracks will crisscross over each other and like do jumps and weave in and out of each other, stuff like that. They play with it a little bit, but the game, it's technically, it's not there. It is so easy to like clip through the geometry of this game and fall off the world and things like that. I wish that we were a video show, because at the start of several races, it'd be me and 7 other racers at the starting line ready to take off. And as soon as it said go and we started driving, 3 or 4 cars would pop 30 feet into the air because they would like clip off another car or hit some geometry. And like it just would be this huge pileup of like things flying everywhere. And then I would just drive past them and take off. But then I would hit the wrong polygon, or I'd go off a jump and be ever so slightly angled wrong, and I'd go flying everywhere. It got frustrating.
It would seem to me, because as you were describing this, I went into the YouTubes, as I do. You might not know this, but as you're talking, I'm always looking at what you're talking about.
I do.
I'm a visual person too, so we should just make a video podcast. I don't know what we're doing. But I looked up Drive, 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 and the announcement trailer is ratioed as hell. It's just an announcement trailer. It's not like it went on there and said anything racist or political. It's just a trailer talking about this game. And it has, it's a 6-to-9 ratio in terms of thumbs up, thumbs downs. People didn't like it. People did not like it. They didn't like it from the get-go.
I mean, I have my problems with it, but I'm surprised to hear that it was that negative of a reaction. It doesn't help that the gameplay on top of that, I think it's fine. Like, if it didn't have this track switching mechanic and it also didn't have those kind of like collision detection issues, it would just be a really average arcade racer. And, it'd be the type of game where it's like, why would I ever play this when I could go play something better, like a Hot Shots Racing or an Outrun or something like that. So it's fun enough for, 3 hours of laughs at the kind of struggle that I was going through, but it's not one that I would ever recommend to people. It's more of a misery loves company type thing.
I hear you, man. And that actually segues nicely into my game, because what I like to do, I really like the N64 for racing games. I really do.
Yeah.
I know a lot of that is nostalgia, I guess, in some way. Like, like you just mentioned Hot Shot Racers. It doesn't hold up to like modern stuff that even looks like it. Mm-hmm. It's just so full of interesting chance-taking type games. On the racing games in that era. I mean, you had all the kart racers. That's when that like exploded, and all your Cruisin' USAs, your San Francisco Rushes, all that stuff. and more wave race, all that stuff. There's so much on that console for racing. So I've been plugging around in there trying to find, because I knew I was going to have a light slate of beats this week, and my go-to is just, hey, let's see if there's a racing game I can chill to. Maybe I can throw a little something on the headphones and just sit back, take my left turns, take my right turns, and get us a beat. Well, I was able to do that with an Automobili Lamborghini, I think is how you say it.
I think it's very
Italian.
Is that an N64 game?
I played it on my N64.
So probably. Good odds.
So I'm thinking so. You know, it's funny, to be completely clear with our audience, I forgot to add that to the sheet until you mentioned racing games. So I'm looking it up now. Yes, it is called Automobili Lamborghini. It's an extremely easy to find game on the N64, extremely common. But my main issue with it is that the controls suck ass, which is a huge deal for a racing game. You're supposed to have good controls on those. They're supposed to be good. That's like all of the game, really, is controlling a car, and they got to be great. They're not great out the get-go, very touchy to the point that like you barely move the stick and the car's immediately just, boom, boy, does it go that way. And maybe they thought like, look how good our controls are because they're super duper responsive. You can just think about going right and then boom, you're already going right. It's like that's not what good controls mean.
Yeah.
But I did settle in with it and played through the campaign that it has there. And actually ended up being pretty fun. I think it looks really good for an N64 game. And I was like, Travis, is this just you trying to defend that little N64? People have been coming down on it a lot lately. Are you just trying to stand for the N64? So I like to go back, especially games in this era, I like to go back and read some reviews from the time. Because they're pretty easy to find from that era. Like IGN still has a lot of theirs, and you can find some old magazine stuff. And I like to read reviews from the time. I don't care what Jimmy Joom said on his blog in 2005 about the game. I want to know what people in 1998 thought about this game. Mm. And when I looked it up, IGN was so blown away by the graphics of this game. They were like, holy shit. They barely even touched on how bad it controlled. They were like, controls are bad, but you will absolutely impregnate your britches when you see how good this game looks. Your pants will make smaller pants. You'll have to give birth to smaller pants from your own pants in 9 months because your pants will be impregnated by you. And the other pants will look kind of like you, which will be strange. But that game it has that going for it. It does look really, really good. It has a good sense of speed. So it's pretty fun. And I like that about N64 games where, yeah, they're mostly all the same. But this one's like Beetle Adventure Racing where you're just in a Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. This has a whole gamut of, you know, not just Lamborghinis, but it has a whole gamut of very, souped up, what do you call them, sports cars or whatever they're called. What are they called when they're Lamborghinis?
Fast boys?
Big speed fast demons? Boys. Speed demon fast boys. So yeah, it's okay. I'm not trying to say it's like a 10 out of 10. It's like a 7 out of 10, but I was pleasantly surprised for a game that I thought was just going to be a racing game with a corporate logo on it.
Wow. I mean, honestly, my biggest takeaway, it sounds fun enough. Doesn't sound like something I would actively track down. My biggest takeaway of this all is I'm surprised there was an N64 game I hadn't heard of before. Maybe if I saw the cover, I'd recognize it, but man.
Don't you have a Google? Do you have a Googler?
Yeah, but I've also got a real noisy keyboard, and I'm not going to subject you to some
the clickety-clacks. Yeah. The clickety-clacks, yeah.
Get you with them horse hooves.
If you have a soft spot for racers and then 64, I think it's an easy option, easy choice.
Very cool. Two quick ones then to round off the beats for me. One is Hold Down. This is just a really cool mobile game. I know. Go for it. Give me your best Hold Down joke.
I've shouted that in a bar. I don't know.
I shouldn't be encouraging that.
It wasn't my best joke. A joke, you know? Hey, don't cancel me.
It's not up to you to decide what your best one is. It's up to the people to decide.
I'll edit it if you need me to.
No, edit it in twice, back to back. I mean, it's a really simple concept. You just kind of drag in and launch these little, bouncing bullets or something, and there are these different bricks. It's like a reverse Arkanoid, basically, but the bricks that you're bouncing down into need to be hit a certain number of times before they'll disappear, so they'll have numbers on them, like 2, 3, 4, up to like 100 plus that times you need to hit them for them to disappear. And then as you go along, you start to unlock, like, you'll shoot more balls at one time, or you just kind of, like, get these natural power-ups that make that process easier. But it's perfect just for a couple of minutes when you're bored, standing in line somewhere. Well, in a world where you would ever go somewhere and stand in line, it would be good for that. But for me, it's just when I'm sitting on my couch,
right.
waiting for DoorDash to come. Yeah, just, you know, play a couple quick rounds, and it's a lot of fun. It's maybe like an hour to get all the way through, but then it has an endless mode, so it'll keep you going. And it's nice to play a mobile game that is just kind of a simple concept that you pay money for, and then that's it. It doesn't ever try to, like, get you to buy a premium currency or anything like that.
Right. Or, like, you can only have a move every 3 days, but if you pay now, you can make a move tomorrow.
Yeah, nothing like that. You can actually just play it whenever you want to play it, which is cool.
And that's called Hole Down.
Hole Down, because you're going down the hole.
All right.
Complete other direction. The other game that I finally finished is Dragon Quest XI. But I've got...
Whoa! That's awesome. Sorry, that's any game that's that long deserves a whoa.
Oh, and here's the thing. One, it took me 80 hours to beat it. And two...
Whoa.
You're not going to believe this. I started it in 2018, so I've been going for 2.5 years.
Whoa.
Oh, thank you for
seriously,
that.
Seriously, congrats.
Thank you for
that enthusiasm. I love when a... No, seriously, though. Don't you feel good about beating a game like that, though? It's not just, you beat Hole Down, great. You'll forget about it in 2 weeks, but this game's going to stick with you for a while.
Yeah.
Because you spent so much time with it.
It really does feel good, and I was happy to finally see credits. It's a little confusing, though, because if you've played Dragon Quest XI... Well, confusing, maybe not the right word, but it's bittersweet almost. You play through Dragon Quest XI, you think you're going to beat it, and then there's more Dragon Quest XI. And now I finally beat it. Like, indisputably, I beat the game. Like, I beat the boss, I got credits, I watched the happy parts that happen at the end of a JRPG where the world is returning to normal. Like, all that stuff happened. But then it gives you, like, a little teaser at the end of the game that there's more story going on, and I've heard from other people through the grapevine that there's kind of like a third act that exists in the post-game for Dragon Quest XI. So I beat it, but I think I still have like 30 hours of Dragon Quest XI to go at the same time.
No. That's a big no for me, dog. If you show me who made it, I'm out. That's it. Show me who made it, I'm out.
Yeah, once I see
that's
those
my,
credits...
I live by that. I don't want to know who made it. Oh, that's who made it? I don't want to play it anymore. And that's how I treat my games. That's
and that's
how I beat them.
The thing. As soon as those credits scroll, it's like, even though the game is fun, I'm like, it's been 80 hours and you showed me credits. It's a little unfair to ask me to keep going. And yet,
and a lot of games do that too. I mean, I've experienced that before. Where it's like, all right, now it puts you back when your character's moving. You're like, no, not going to do this.
And there are some games that do that I really like when they do that. Like Nier Automata does that very well. But I haven't quite decided for myself yet if I'm going to see it through. I might, you know, when I have a free, like next Saturday or something, a free couple hours, play a little bit more and see if the story in this kind of epilogue section hooks me and if I'll keep going. Or I might just tuck it aside. If there's anyone out there that has played all the way through the full meat of Dragon Quest XI and can like definitively tell me how critical it is I play this last epilogue bit, let me know. But... either way, I'm counting it as a beat. Again, like I said, the credits scrolled after I beat the big bad. It's a win in my book.
Yeah, I'm looking up online on how long to beat. So the main story says it's 56 hours. How many hours did you put into this thing?
My final hour counter was 75, I think. But I did some grinding, and there was at least a bit of leaving it idle. So
it says, okay, so the main story is 56. Then the main plus extras... which is usually what I hit for these, because I'm not just doing the main story. I'm doing some side quests and stuff like that along the way. 88 hours for that. Completionist, though, if you're trying to get all of it, 122 hours.
Oof.
So I would say your third act is probably not going to be a completionist level, because you're not getting everything.
No.
You're just trying to close out that last act. I mean, I would say there's maybe 10, 15 more hours in there if you really wanted it. Does that sound better than 30? Are you still a big no on that?
It sounds fine. It's more like, do I want to put those 10 hours into more Dragon Quest XI, or do I want to put them into the first 10 hours of another RPG that I could really get into the meat of? So,
exactly.
I'm not. I loved 11 all the way through, and when it ended, I was, you know, I'm always kind of happy to be at the end of a game. Towards the end of a game, I'm usually like ready for it to be done because I've sort of mentally prepared for the closure of beating it. But that's not to say that I didn't like it and wouldn't play more. It's just I wish that they had not given me the moral dilemma of what to do. I wish that they had just put all this before they showed me the credits. Just don't show me the credits so I don't have all these feelings.
Yeah, I don't. Again, until you're done with me, I don't care who made it. Show me who made it when we're done. Okay, last game for me, Vigilante 8 on the N64. I've been tearing the N64 up, dude.
Yeah,
I love
it.
1996 really stuck with me. I was actually playing this one a little bit before we jumped into 1996 and then gave it a break and came back. This came out in 1998, if you're curious. Yes, I am a 90s expert at this point. I didn't play this back in the day. I was more of a, at the time, I had a PlayStation. I didn't have an N64. I had to play my N64 with my buddy at his house. But I was more of a Twisted Metal guy. I didn't play a lot of the Vigilante 8. I know it came out on both, but I saw them as similar enough, and Twisted Metal was more my style. But I played Vigilante 8, and I tried to play through it with every character and beat each one of their singular quests and did that. And by that, just by doing that, it's way easier than Twisted Metal, which is nearly impossible to do that. For me, some of those characters seem impossible to win the whole thing with. But Vigilante 8, it's certainly possible, and it's pretty fun. It's similar enough. If you like Twisted Metal type games, you'll probably enjoy Vigilante 8 enough. And I think visually it holds up okay. I mean, at least on the PVMs it does. I've tried to play it co-op in the past on like a giant CRT. Not great. Mm-hmm. Not enough screen real estate there with the split screen to make sense of anything that's going on. But for a solo game, not too bad.
Interesting. Vigilante 8 forever to me is a game that I see advertisements for or saw advertisements for back in the day. But I never really like processed it as a real game. Like I never stopped to think like, oh, there's like a cartridge out there of Vigilante 8 that I could plug in and actually play. It's not just ads in a Nintendo Power.
Yeah, that, I do remember the ads were persistent. I do remember that, yeah. There's a second one too. I haven't played any of that, so that's on a future episode, I suppose.
Interesting. Well, I gotta say, you know, you came into the stream the other day and you were like, I gotta admit to you, buddy, I don't think I'm gonna have any beats for this next episode. I didn't beat any games. And here you are with three rock solid beats. Mm-hmm. You almost had as many as me. So good job. You scrambled. You got all your homework done on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Way to go.
I mean, they're all extremely easy and short, but so am I. Okay, let's jump into the beat tweets. Actually, it's more of the Polykiller section, but we'll get to the beat tweet soon. So, again, once again, everybody, if you're wondering, like, what is this section all about? This is my first time on this podcast. You guys talked about Tookus Meat, got me lured in. You haven't mentioned Tookus Meat again. Tookus Meat. And then also, if you beat a game, you can take a picture of the credits there, which is when we know we're done, and you put that on Twitter. If you have a Twitter account, you'll need that for this, by the way. Yeah. You can't get by without it. You write a little something about the game, like, hey man, I just played this fucking game, it was great, man, it was awesome. Or it was like, this game was terrible, I'd rather have had my family murdered in front of me. That's all fine, put that all in there. Hashtag just beat it, and put at Polykill in there, so that we'll find it. And man, if you do it upwards of 30 times, you could be a Polykiller. You could. That could be you. We could be talking about you right now. Or if your tweet was clever enough, we'll read it after this section. So, Steve, how do you want to do this, man? Because this is insane. We've never had this before. This is unprecedented. I think the most before is maybe 16 games at most, 15, 16, 17, maybe 21 time.
Yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So we have two. We set the most number of games beat on one episode of Polykill twice in the same episode. Two freaking all-stars going head-to-head, and it's... What are you guys doing out there? Way to go. I'm so impressed, but my gosh, that's a lot of beats.
It is a lot of beats. It's a lot of beats. Let's just start and get out of the way, and then we can talk a little bit about what happened here. So I'll start with our friend Corpse Flood Gaming, who you guys remember last time we talked about, he sent out that threatening tweet that said, I'm about to beat a whole bunch of fucking Ninja Turtle games. And we believed him.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we?
And he delivered. He was here to say, yep, I'm delivering on that promise.
Now, if I remember, he listed 30, and it might be that maybe the month ain't over or something. There's still more to come. I don't know.
The month's only half done, and he's already deep into the list.
Okay, I see how this goes. So, yeah, so he promised 30. He's already beaten a shite ton of the 30. So here we go. Most of these are Ninja Turtle games. So instead of saying Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles over and over again, I'm going to try to limit that by just saying Turtles, okay? So he beat the first Turtles game on the NES, Turtles 3 Manhattan Project, Turtles 2 arcade game, Turtles arcade game on the arcade, Turtles in Time on the arcade, Turtles 4, Turtles in Time on the Super Nintendo, Turtles Arcade Attack, Turtles Out of the Shadows, Turtles on the 3DS, Turtles Tournament Fighters on the NES, Turtles Tournament Fighters on the Genesis, Tournament Fighters on the Super Nintendo, Turtles Hyperstone Heist, Turtles Smash Up, Turtles 2013, Turtles 2003, Turtles 2 Battle Nexus, Turtles 3 Mutant Nightmares, Turtles 2013 3DS, Turtles in Time Reshelled, Turtles Mutant in Manhattan, Turtles Fall of the Foot Clan, Turtles 2 Back from the Sewers, Turtles 2007, Turtles Dangers of the Ooze. That was 25 Turtles games I just said there.
25 Ninja Turtles games, and somehow not the Polykiller for this episode. Big round of applause for Corpse Flood, because way to stick to your guns. Not only to have 25, but to not even mix in a single other game. My man has gone Turtles exclusive on the month of March, and nothing but love.
Nothing but love. He didn't just stick to his guns. He stuck to his size. He stuck to his swords. He stuck to his bow. And he stuck to his nunchucks.
Good job remembering all four. I wonder if maybe the way you structured that sentence was buying yourself the time to remember, but way to go. I respect it.
All right, take a big deep breath here. Let's see what we got.
So, I don't know if this is just the craziest coincidence of all time, or if our man VR45 saw these tweets. I mean, that hashtag is public. You can look up Just Beat It and see who's throwing them around.
I'm sure he did. He also heard the podcast where we said, good luck, you're not going to get it because it's going to be Corpse Flood. So he heard the call.
I'm not sure if he wanted to build in a little bit of a friendly rivalry or just wanted the glory of beating the all-time Beats record in the same episode that it was set. But we have 30 games from our man Viar here. See if we can go through them all. He beat Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition, Ultra Street Fighter 4, Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting, Captain Commando, Marvel vs. Capcom, Star Fox 64 3D, and Star Fox 64. Played both versions. Street Fighter 2 The World Warrior, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Street Fighter 3 New Generation, Broforce, Street Fighter 3 Second Impact Giant Attack, Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. I did not know there were this many Street Fighter games. I think he said in one of the tweets that he basically just played through every Street Fighter game he's never played before in a collection, but way to go. And then we get into a whole other spree of stuff. Non-Street Fighter. We go into 1943, Roomboo First Blood, Donut County, Virtua Fighter 2, Streets of Rage, Metal Slug 2, Dead Connection, Marvel Super Heroes vs. Street Fighter, Marvel vs. Capcom Clash of the Superheroes, X-Men Mutant Academy 2, Hook, Kamiko, Kirby's Dream Land, Outrun, Aladdin, and Simpsons the Arcade Game. Whew.
Whew. All right. Wowee, wow, wow.
Way to go to both of these. These were coming in so hot that I would refresh, and two or three more would pop up every time I refreshed Twitter. Like, these guys were going blow for blow for a while.
And you know, I want no disrespect to my man VR45, because 30 games...
Yeah.
Insane. Even if it was Kamiko 30 times, I couldn't do that in 2 weeks. I want to shout out Corpse Flood again for beating that original Turtles game.
No kidding.
Thorn in my side, such a bitch. I didn't think it was beatable, I did think it was beatable, but it's weird that somebody I know is beating it. That's like knowing somebody who has been on the moon. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, I got a buddy who's been on the moon. It's like, no way! On the fucking moon? Like, that's how it feels to know of someone who's beaten that OG Turtz. So, good job, Corpse Flood, man. And, Vire, I think you've made a mortal enemy here. We can't wait to see how it plays out in future episodes. If you need us to get out of the way and you guys just want to fight, we can maybe arrange that. That could be a Patreon exclusive. We'd really help out the network. Yeah, let us know. Maybe in an email. Okay. Let's get into some beat tweets then. And good Lord, could anybody else have beaten the game? I don't know.
Each of these guys collectively beat more games that I think we've beaten all year, but we True. Did leave a little bit of opportunity for other people to beat stuff. We literally had to split the beat sheets into two different sheets, one for our champions and one for our also-rans. But here's a little bit of love for our also-rans. First up, we have at Nintendo Hodge says, it's hard to take a screenshot while wearing a VR headset, but hashtag just beat it, was trying to get this in before you record, but I guess I missed out. If you're a Rick and Morty fan, this is a must play. And the game is Trover Saves the Universe. And I'm just here to say, you know what? If you miss that recording, we'll just get you in the next one, buddy.
We'll get you in the next one.
We're not going to leave that beat out on the street. We got your back.
Hell no. Hell no. We clean the streets. We put the beats in our Took Us Meat. We got Corpse Flood. Oh, shit. Who's that? Did he beat any games this week? That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Hell yeah. The first game in my all-out TMNT rampage for the month of March for the Cartridge Club, Turtle Madness Month. Probably the hardest out of the way first. Not bad once I practiced a bit. Not my fave, though. Glad to finally defeat it. So, again, once again, hats off for beating that OG Turts. Oh, man. One day for me. I'll do it. One day. I've made it to the hallway before Shredder, but that's as far as I've gotten.
There's something like quaint and charming to imagining Corpse Flood having to practice anything. Like,
no, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, really, my dude? You don't just beat him? You actually, oh, wow, that's insane. I guess the greats really, I guess Michael Phelps does practice in a pool sometimes, doesn't he?
Yeah, I suppose so. But just like with the totals here, hot on his heels, we have VR45. It says Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting, the arcade version on Switch. Listen to an old podcast episode as usual while playing, and suddenly Trav tells Jake how he bought the 30th anniversary collection and it was hard as balls. Damn, that was meta. So you might have conjured some of this with some of your past actions here.
I know that the Street Fighter 2 itself wasn't hard, but the first Street Fighter was super hard. I hate that game.
Never played.
Don't. But yeah, good job there, VR45. Thanks for listening to old episodes, man. Good on you.
Yeah.
Church at the Game Grinder says, hashtag The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners. Wow, I didn't expect this to be so good. An incredibly loose comparison at best. It's like Half-Life Alyx light in gameplay and graphics. Full-fledged story, multiple endings, got 12 hours out of it. Must play VR game. So that's Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners. I didn't know about this, but sounds neat.
Awesome. Timely, because I'm playing Walking Dead, and I added it to my my VR backlog, my wish list. So
thanks
for the recommendation, Church. So we got another one here from VR45. I couldn't leave this one out. Something about this game is just, it's just too enticing. We got Roomboo First Blood on Switch. Is a nice little game that needs more content and polish. This cute, dust-sucking effer has a real thirst for blood, kills and destroys everything in its owner's homes just to save some valuables. Priorities gone wrong. So
I think it's Roombo. I think it's like a Roomba. It's like a Roombo, but it's like Rambo.
Rambo, Roomba. Okay, that word Roombo will never come out of my mouth correctly. But what a weird concept for a game.
I love it. I gotta play it. What's it on?
Probably Steam.
Good. I gotta play it. Man, that looks fun as hell. Good job. Up next, Frankie, it's been a while. Good Lord, Frankie, where have you been? At Viper Strike, game number 8 this year. He says, blood will be spilled. Characters and writing are fantastic. Very reminiscent of Stranger's Wrath. Gameplay is the weak part here, as controls are sluggish and the AI gets stuck causing checkpoint resets. Otherwise, very cool spaghetti westerns. That does seem neat.
Yeah, very cool. The screenshots are very, very unique art style in that one, too, so seems cool.
Yeah, I think that's where he was getting the Stranger's Wrath vibes from, maybe.
Yeah.
Some of that Oddworld stuff, yeah.
Next up, we got our good friend of the show, TopSpot123, says, bought at launch, finally played Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks, and I just beat it. It built upon and improved everything from Phantom Hourglass, bigger, smarter, and better made than expected, a full-fledged adventure worthy of the name. I forgot DS games can be this good. That's awesome to hear that you enjoyed it. DS games were always good, though, Top Spot, so maybe you should play more DS games.
Except for this one, Spirit Tracks is ass, Top Spot. What are you talking about? Phantom Hourglass is better in every possible way. Oh, I can't with you people in this Spirit Tracks nonsense just on a train all day. Ooh, on a train. You can't go anywhere but where the train goes. Screw all that. Give me Phantom Hourglass. All right, now that that's over with, very good job, Top Spot. I'm very proud of you. Please continue to listen to the show. Up next here, Captain Drachma. He says, I'm not sure I have the words to describe how beating this game makes me feel. This is probably the most difficult game I have ever beaten, but it's so rewarding. It's a top five game for me. It's that good, and I beat it on Stadia. He's talking about Enter the Gungeon, and I find that very interesting because this man has beaten all those Souls games the kids are talking about. So for this one to be tougher than that, no thanks from me.
Way to go. Yeah, way to beat a roguelike on Stadia of all things. Very impressive. All right, we've got one last one here. It's from Blink at Blinkum.
Who's that?
Says, time to put Trav's cheeks, his took his meat into the hot seat. Hopefully he doesn't hashtag just beat it.
Oh, well, I might. Let's see how hot they get.
Let's do it. All right, so I don't know how I played a Walking Dead game, how we got Church playing a Walking Dead game, and we're talking about zombie bites earlier, but I have something kind of in that ballpark here. You are bitten by a radioactive version of your daughter. What superpower do you get from this bite?
I can fart a huge chainsaw fart and continue on about what I'm doing without ever looking around or feeling any bit of self-consciousness about that fart. I have an immunity to shame.
That's a beautiful thing. Yeah, I mean, you were lucky to receive this bite. Just like Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, but I think you got the better end of that bargain.
If I truly had an immunity to shame, I would definitely market my podcast more fervently.
Yeah, I probably would at all, so it'd be good for both of us. Someday.
Very good.
All right, so please rank for me the last three beverages you consumed from worst to best.
Sure. Yeah, I could do that easy. Okay, worst to best. Ooh, all right. Number three. Coming in at number three is going to be a cold glass of milk. Now, I like milk, obviously, because I drank it, but it's number three on this list. Had that after dinner. Number two, water. Ew. What? It doesn't have any flavor.
It's nothing.
All it does is just get your mouth cold and wet. It's gross. But no, I did enjoy it. And then number one's going to have to be absinthe, which I took a shot of before we started and several sips of while we've been recording. I don't drink a lot on podcasts, but I was feeling pent up today. So I needed something to loosen my muscles, and a little shot of something weird will do it. So I'm feeling pretty good right now. Hopefully I'm still articulating and my pants are still on.
This explains to everyone why the later answers to the hot seat questions are always your best answers, because you just get more loose as they go on.
It is very true.
All right, so can you explain something to me?
Sure.
Does the sky go all the way to the ground? And if not, where does it stop?
The sky stops where the top of the trees are. Once you go above the trees, oh no, you're in the sky. But when you're below the trees, you're just at tree level. Duh.
So the three layers are ground, tree level, and sky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. Perfect. Thank you.
Now, if you live in a city, there's like stuff above the trees sometimes. I don't know what that's called, though, because I don't live there. You might have a word for it. Is that building level? What is that, skyscraper level? I don't know. Bird level?
What are buildings if not the trees of the city, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Deep. Wow, that's what they come to Polykill for. But let me ask, this is what they really come to Polykill for, is this question. What part of your body is the itchiest?
The top part, like right underneath where my belt is and above where my package is. There's like a little area in there that just some days I'm doing nothing and it's like, bro, scratch me. And I'm like, why? Other than the fact that you itch. So yeah, I paw around at that a little bit.
It's just like your natural born fanny pack gets a little bit itchy.
Pretty much. I guess the marinara is getting down in there and it's causing a calls it a bit of a deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it all makes sense, right? You get the crumbs coming off those mozzarella sticks.
Yeah.
Ugh, no good.
100%, yeah. And I'm a sweatpant wearer 24/7, so I don't know what's irritating. I don't know what's going on down there. I should check it out. I should look sometimes.
Put a little lotion on there. See what it does for you.
I should. This has actually been very helpful. Thank you.
Now, finally, if you were given the ability, well, you're being forced. You don't have a choice to opt out. You have to do one of these two. To be pretty good, like competitive, but not the best in any actual sense. Like, you're not setting any world records. You're probably not famous for how good you are at these things. You're just very, very talented, much, much more than the average person. Would you rather be particularly skilled at doing yo-yo tricks or four square?
It's got to be yo-yo tricks, man.
Yeah.
Foursquare kind of limits you to a place where you're going to be like, hey, come over here. Watch where I look at my Foursquare stuff. You can't do that like on a plane or anything, but I mean, you can whip out a yo-yo trick. You know, you could wink at somebody be like, hey, check this out. And then do something crazy with your yo-yo, like take their hat off or something and put it on your own head. You know, wouldn't it be crazy? People be like, whoa. But with a Foursquare trick, you have to be like, hey, you should come by my place sometime. I do some crazy Foursquare stuff. It's a different vibe.
If you're just sitting there doing sweet yo-yo tricks, someone might walk up to you and be like, hey, man, nice yo-yo tricks. Way to go. Let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But if you're just really good at Foursquare, everyone's like, why are you being so competitive against my kids? Like, stop bullying them and just go away.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really hard to practice by yourself. I think you get a lot of weird looks for that. Like, that guy's really intense about whatever that is over there. I can't really tell. It looks like he's trying to fight off bees from here. but with the people, if you see a guy really talented with a yo-yo, you know to stand a good 4 feet away, but still have a cool conversation with him.
Yeah, you give him the space to work his magic, but mm-hmm. you appreciate the art form that you're bearing witness to.
For sure. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Okay,
good job.
Yeah, is that it?
You survived. You made it through all five.
Great. Let me do a quick first-hand check of the tukus meat, and feels okay. I don't feel any second or even third degree burnage. We've done it. All right, let's move on to the discussion, which was suggested for us from a one Leah. Sounds familiar. Does that sound familiar
nice.
To you?
Yeah, sounds wonderful, sound actually.
We'll see. Yeah. She says, I came up with this, and I texted Steve about it, and I have the receipts that I did. So she's like, hey, listen, this has been already approved by your podcast co-host. She suggests top five games with an animal companion. She says, in the traditional sense, sure, yeah, you could take this question at strictly face value and be as basic as you want. I'm not your dad. But I can also see a lot of wiggle room here for what qualifies. I'd be super interested to see what games you guys choose. And you're only allowed to do this idea if you have fun. So let's try to have fun here, Steve.
All right.
Because this person, whoever they are, texted you about it, and you said, this is fine. So, let's do it. What is your number five game where you have an animal as a companion? For anyone confused, that emailer was Steve's girlfriend.
That's true. We can confirm. She is wonderful, and she did, in fact, text me.
Oh, good.
Although,
I was hoping I caught her in a lie there, but I guess not.
It wasn't to run it by me. She doesn't care if I like it or not. She would still send the email in. It was really to validate that she came up with the idea of animal companions before we conjured the idea of where you play as an animal. to show that she was ahead of the curve. She's not borrowing on someone else's idea and iterating.
I see. I got it. Okay. That works.
But as I started putting the list together, I was like, man, well, this list could really easily look like the top five games where you play as an animal, because it turns out when you play as an animal, if you have a companion, that companion's probably also an animal. But
happens a lot, doesn't it?
So I was strongly considering going Spyro, and maybe you have Spyro on later on, but I went somewhere else. I went with Suikoden 3. Specifically, one of your main characters, Hugo, has a griffin, a pet griffin, who is also a party member that you can control in this JRPG, named Fubar. And you can do, like, team attacks. And I just like the idea of being able to control a griffin in a JRPG, and that griffin has strong ties to one of the main characters. So it also happens to be an incredible RPG. I really love Suikoden 3, so that is my number 5.
I've not played that. That's interesting. I've not played any of the Suikodens, so maybe one day. My number 5 is going to be Red 13 from Final Fantasy VII.
I will allow it.
Thank you. I'm glad. Which is like, what is that thing? It was like a half tiger, half wolf thing with a barbed tail that shoots fire. I love it. Give me that guy all day. Take out all the people in that game and just give me a game where I'm that dude. It'd be great.
It's a shame we haven't gotten a game where you can just play as Red 13. Maybe someday.
I know. But yeah.
So my number 4 feels like it was an inevitability, but I had to drop Pokemon Yellow. I chose Yellow because that's the one where you got the Pikachu with you, side by side through the whole game. You can check up on him. You can click to see if he's doing well, if he's smiling, if he's frowning, whatever's going on. But I mean, is there any more iconic animal companion than a Pokemon? Like, that is the traditional animal companion in video games.
I guess if you think Pokemons are animals, sure. Yeah, it works for me. He is cute. Until he shoots lightning up your ass, and then you're like, wow. Number 4 for me is going to be Rush from Mega Man.
Ooh, you did get creative, so you went with a robot animal.
I mean, does it count? I don't know.
It counts because it's our podcast and we write the rules.
You're absolutely right about that. So Rush, yeah, he's great. He helps you out, helps you do stuff. What better of a companion to have than one that also helps you? You're not just feeding it, leading it around. It actually comes in handy.
I tend to find that with Rush, he runs out of energy right when I need him most. So I don't know if I really have come to depend on him very often.
You got to use Purina. What have you been using? using that base level generic store bought bullshit. That's what you're doing.
You
got
to
get
store brand stuff.
No, you got to get the good stuff, buddy.
It's all grain. There's no meat in that. It's not
you
a healthy
diet. Got to have protein.
All right. So number 3, game I love. I'd be lying to myself and everyone else if I didn't mention Banjo-Kazooie. You're an animal, and you have an animal companion. You can't do backflips without that bird. You can't do beakbusters without that bird. How are you going to do a talon trot if you don't got that bird? You cannot.
You can't do it. You just can't do it. Yo, you're right. You got me giggling.
But it's
you're
just
right,
not going to work out. You can maybe 20 jiggies total. You need that bird.
20 jiggies total. Can you play without the bird? You can't, right? You got to have the bird. There's no option to be like, I want to go sans bird.
I mean,
I want to go.
You can make like a moral choice not to let the bird out and just never press the button that makes it leave the backpack. But that seems more sadistic. And
I'm just wondering how many jiggies you could get sans Kazooie, all Banjo.
There's got to be someone that's done a challenge. I mean, people are beating Super Mario 64 in half of an A press. They certainly are able to beat Banjo Kazooie with no Kazooie, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. We'll have to see. What number was that? We're on number 3 now for me. Sonic 2 Tails. He's always he's got the tails going. That's his name, the namesake there, believe it or not. Yeah. He'll help you out. If you're down and out, he'll zip you back, fly you around. He's a little bit of a goober. He gets into some kerfuffles, but I think his heart's in the right place, and his tail's in two places, which is crazy. And it always brings up the age-old question, how many buttholes does Tails have if he has two tails? And I firmly believe he still has one butthole.
Yeah, I would be willing to fight someone that thinks otherwise.
Yeah.
I feel that strongly about it. So my number 2 then is Tails from Sonic Adventure or Sonic the Hedgehog 2. So we lined her up. Way to go, buddy. I don't think of him as very helpful the way you do. You start a level, you run away from him, he falls into a pit, and then you see him float down towards you at some point, and then he falls off another pit and you repeat the process. But he's iconic. When he can help you, it's nice. But even when he doesn't, it's just nice to know that he's around somewhere. He's just part of the team. You got to squad up in Sonic the Hedgehog in the Emerald Hill Zone, and he's there for you.
I think he does fly a plane later. That was helpful, right?
That's true.
Doesn't he fly the plane? Yeah. So you take back what you said. That was so foul.
I'm sorry. Tell you what, why don't you give me your second pick here,
okay.
And we'll go from there.
I'm going to go with Shadowmere from Skyrim. So if you complete a certain quest line in Skyrim, you're gifted a horse that's from the dark side of hell. He's completely black, he's got red eyes, and he's badass.
Wow.
He'll fight for you. You can get into a fight, and you're fighting off dudes, and you look over, and your horse is fucking fighting the dude too, and you're like, hell yeah, Shadowmere, get him. which is fun for a horse because usually horses like Epona or Roach will just scatter, not really contribute much. But Shadowmere, full ass fisticuffs in the fight with you, and he can't die, which is also great. You can always find him later because, again, he's from hell.
Sounds like that horse listens to a lot of Disturbed.
He might be down with the sickness. I'm not sure, but he's pretty cool.
All right, so for my number one, and I'm sure we're going to line up on number one because I know you love this game just as much as I do.
Oh, my.
The Last Guardian. Treecko is nothing if not the perfect animal companion. The whole game is themed around this, getting to and fro with this companion, finding ways to reach new places together, helping each other out. He saves you, you save him. You can pet him. When his feathers get ruffled, you can straighten them out. Someone pokes him, gets a little spear in his side, you can pull it out for him, you can heal up the wound. Oh. You're just going through life together, and you have nothing but each other, and you're making your way through.
Man, sounds like you just almost wrote a country song about that. That was great. I've not played that game, but I'm aware of that giant, scary bird dog.
Excellent game, and one of the only animal companions where it really does like mix the heart and the vibes with the gameplay.
Gotta love it. My number one is Morgana from Persona 5. And if you've ever glimpsed a second of this game, you probably saw like a weird cat thing hanging around. And that's the thing I'm talking about. It's very crucial to the game, a central part of the narrative and part of your fun. It's I think the voice was a little grating to me at first because it's a character that talks a whole lot. But, you know, I got a soft spot for it after a while. When you spend 100 hours with the son of a bitch, you start to really like it. So I like Morgana a lot.
I'm sad to say Persona 5 is still one on the backlog that I do need to play. But as someone who's never played it, my impression of Morgana is just that it's the cat that tells you to go to sleep. I've never heard anyone say anything else other than that it yells at you to go to sleep.
It bails you out of a lot of stuff. It's helpful in fights. Cat is part of your party. Does some cool fight stuff, heals you a lot, does a lot of cool stuff, but also knows a lot about the world, so is sort of your, what's the name of that damn fairy in Zelda?
Listen!
What's the name of the fairy?
Navi.
Yeah, it's sort of like your Navi, but way less annoying than that, but almost.
Interesting.
But more, way more helpful. Not just like, hey, listen, there's a tree you need to go make not sad anymore, as Navi would. Morgana is very helpful because the world of Persona 5 is highly complex and contrived. So you got to have a very smart cat to lead you around.
Beautiful. Well, I'm a little disappointed you didn't go with The Last Guardian. It makes me question your taste a little bit, but overall, a solid list.
I mean, maybe if I'd played it, we'll see. Maybe one day.
Someday.
Maybe one day. All right. I think that does it for an episode. All right. What about you? You think you done? Are you done with this shit?
No, let's just loop her back up to the top and start over. So we've got some games coming out here in the next couple of weeks.
Paradise Lost, my God. There's a murder in Arkansas was what I knew as. Something documentary about that. This was fun. If you guys have games where you enjoyed having an animal companion, I mean, feel free to let us know. Sometimes it's nice to see all your beats, but sometimes it's also nice to hear about some stuff that we said. So,
yeah.
So if you want to yell at us about something, you know, try that. Be like, hey, I played a game where an animal was my friend and I liked it and you guys didn't list it. We'd like to know what game that is. So please do that. You can do that at on Twitter, at Polykill, or you can send us an email at polykillpodcast@gmail.com. You can find Steve and I. I'm at Trav Plays Games. Steve is at BlinkOom.
Yep.
For some reason. And I guess we'll catch you next time then.
Peace. Play more Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games, I guess.
I guess.